Now, with the Marriage Act. You'll say, Father, you've had no time left on the Marriage Act. This is the thing I'm most scared of. How can I handle it? It's so short and so simple, you've done it already. To begin with, once you told your child, your daddy and I loved each other so much God gave you to us, that's already the first idea of the Marriage Act. The next step. The daddy puts a seed inside the mommy. The baby grows in the mother's heart. You heard the little fellow saying it. They don't wonder how or what or where. They just get the idea. So daddy's got something to do with it. The third step. Now, it doesn't have to be in this order, but I'm suggesting as they get more and more mature. You know, when God wants something to grow, he has a seed meet an egg. And, see, the seed grows inside the daddy's body. Remember I told you little boys have a little bag that hangs between their legs? That's where the seed grows. The mommy, the eggs grow about over here and over here. Now, the daddy places the seed inside the mommy's body in the same place where the baby would come out, if God gives them a baby. If the seed meets an egg, then a baby grows into the mother's heart. You get that idea. And then finally, the most advanced level, when the child will know the meaning of love, the mature meaning of love, you'd say, you know, when we love someone, we want to show we're one with them. That means we're going to be one with God in heaven for all eternity. That's what love means. Now, married people can be one in a very special way. You know, I told you before, God wants only married people to have babies, because look, if they're not married, who'll take care of the baby? Who'll love the baby? But married people can be one not just in spirit when they say they love each other, the way other people can be one in spirit, but in a very special way in their bodies too. And at a time like that, in a very loving embrace, which only God should see, it's so private, to you keep the privacy, the Marriage Act, the sacredness, at a time like that, the seed passes from the father's body through his penis into the vagina of the wife. And then if it moves to her womb and meets an egg there, then the baby grows there. A very simple explanation of the Marriage Act. Some of you might say, but Father, I'd be horrified if I told my children that. My answer to that is very, very simple. Would you not be doubly horrified if you heard the way the gang told your children this? Take your pick. Do you want the gang to say your folks laugh, and this is the filthy story, and this is the way it happens with all the obscenity that goes with it? Or do you want them to simply have reverence, 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 and more reverence? That's why I'm telling you here more than ever. If you're reverent, everything fits. You won't be scared. You'll say it the right way, at the right time. But they still should know it before puberty. That's the Marriage Act. And if you've got the other foundations in, it's relatively simple. We are going to discuss the closing two points. First of all, emission of seed in the male and menstruation in the female. The emission of seed in the male. A lot of mothers, and this doesn't mean Catholic mothers, mothers of all types, do not realize that in the male there is a spontaneous flow of seed at puberty. And this happens at nighttime. Usually the boy will get what we call a wet dream. It's called a wet dream or a seminal emission or a nocturnal emission because it's a flow of seed at nighttime. He will get a dream with full sexual pleasure. He may wake up during it. Now, he should know, about a teaspoonful or 2 teaspoonfuls of sperm will escape from his penis. He should know this is God's way of telling him he can now be a father. And therefore, if he wakes up, what nature began, let nature finish. He should know there's nothing sinful. This is God's way, of telling him he can be a father. This is something sacred. Also, he should know already that God put the very special pleasure in the private parts of our body to show a father and mother they're doing a good thing if and when they have a baby. Therefore, he should do nothing to bring on the pleasure, but if the pleasure comes, start it this way at nighttime, let God's providence take care of it. So he doesn't worry, he's not shocked. One little fellow thought it was sediment from the urine, had no idea what it was emitting, coming from his penis. Too many wives don't know about this. Too many women don't know about it. The reason is, well, wherever they find out, they don't know it exists, and therefore the husband or any other occasion doesn't come up to tell it. So I mentioned that it should be known. Now, it normally happens, as I say, about in 8th grade for the boys, and roughly around 12 to 13. But again, they should know about it before it happens. How long does this keep up? How frequent is it? It does not have the regularity of menstruation. So it'll run completely irregular about, on the average, 2 times a month. Now, when I say on the average twice a month, this doesn't mean that it's on schedule. It might be a couple of days in a row, then nothing for days or weeks. But on the average, twice a month. How long does it keep in ages? Well, some doctors say it stops in the 20s. Some say it stops in the 30s. Some say it stops in the 40s. I know of 2 men that told me they still have a flow in their 50s. Occasionally, you have a husband that's using his sperm in marriage will still have a flow at nighttime. So we don't know why it happens, and it seems to be that the body simply sloughs off seed which it does not absorb. As you may know, most of the sperm is absorbed back into the body if it's not otherwise emitted. So the boy should know about this. And a girl should know about it, too. I know one girl, 18-year-old, very shocked to realize that the male would get a spontaneous sexual pleasure without bringing it about, you know, automatically, at nighttime, or any time he might sleep. So on the average, as I say, it's about twice a month, and it starts at puberty. Now, if it's important that the boy should know about this, it's doubly important the girl should know about it so that in menstruation she won't be shocked, because there she thinks she's bleeding. There's a light side of this and a heavy side. I think on the light side you can see why girls should know about menstruation, because otherwise, incidentally, the boys should know too, so they'll be gentlemen, so they won't ask embarrassing questions, and also so they don't bring back the wrong kind of napkin from the supermarket, as has happened. Or what happened in the Peoria Diocese, the fifth grade boys are playing in the schoolyard. School was open, but school was not in session. And one of the little fellas went in to use the girls' washroom, and he came out and he told his playmates, "You know what? The girl's got a slot machine in their place. I put a dime in. Look what I got. I got a Band-Aid." Go on, the other little fellas, "Put that away, put that away." He knew better. Now, that's the light side. It's a much more serious side when girls don't know. In one case, Don Werner Moore, the priest psychiatrist from Catholic University of America formerly, tells the story of the girl in junior high leading the band on the football field between halves. Then she suddenly feels blood running down her legs. She was so ashamed and shocked by it, she ended up with a year in a mental institution. One of the men at these talks came to me and says, "Father, you don't know how important this is. Women have told me, say it, Father, say it." One woman said, "I ran out of the house shrieking in hysterics 4 months in a row. My mother wouldn't tell me, my sister wouldn't tell me." This man said, when he was in sixth grade, a girl in sixth grade was living with her father. Her mother had died. She had nobody to give her any advice. She had rather prominent breast development. Nobody told her how to dress. She came to school with a rather tight sweater. And you know, sixth grade boys are buffoons. They're the biggest clowns of the male at any age. So here, they were teasing her about her prominent breasts. The teacher sent her home in disgrace because of her tight sweater. The shock of being sent home in disgrace brought on her first menstrual period. She thought she was dying, not knowing what was going on, more dismayed and discouraged and depressed than ever, and she simply committed suicide. Now, that's an extreme case, I know, but believe me, it's necessary to know this. At one parish on the south side, I gave this talk 2 years in a row to two different groups. They told me the second year, see, in the first year, I recommended, as I recommend tonight, there are very good films, one from the Kotex Company, one from the Modest people, on menstruation, for girls sixth grade or up. The priests and the Mother's Club sent out postcards. Well, first of all, they said the film would be held on such and such a day for the girls. Three of the mothers stormed the rectory and said, "We will not have our girls learning such things. We don't want them to know such things." What can you do with mothers like that? The Mother's Club had to say, "All right, we'll show it. We'll tell the parents. If you don't want your children there that day, keep them home." So this should be known. How do you explain menstruation? Well, before the girls can get the idea from the girls' gang, it's the curse. And this might even be as early as fourth grade, because the fourth grade girls are already so often getting on the idea. The big girls in fifth and sixth grade, they know something I don't know. And you know, this feminine approach, "I know something you don't know." And that is why a mother might already start getting her girls ready that this will be a sign of their growing up. So how do you explain menstruation? Not the curse, never that. No, you simply say a thing like this. "You know, God made the body in a wonderful way. And I told you about a baby growing in the womb under the mother's heart. Now the lining drops off of the womb every month. And it's washed away with a little blood. And this is called menstruation because it happens every month. So, this will be happening in a few months. And this is the way God is telling you, you now can be a mother. That means you should respect yourself more than ever. This is something good. God made you this way. And all you have to do, keep yourself clean externally. The body keeps itself clean internally." And those are the normal rules of hygiene. The girl is not frightened. You give her a positive idea of menstruation, the dropping away of the lining, where the old lining is washed away with a little blood and the new lining grows there. So if a baby grew there, there'd be a new lining where the baby could get its nourishment. You see, it's very, very positive. So that's all you'd say for menstruation. And it's done. How about masturbation in boys starting as little ones? You should know that there are three levels of masturbation. The first level is from infancy to 5 years. We call that infantile masturbation. The second is 6 through 10. The third is 11 up, and we call that adult masturbation. Now, infantile masturbation is no sin. cannot be in God's sight because a child does not have the free will to commit a sin at that time. And it's really this, the child is playing with himself, more or less sexual experimentation. You do not say, oh, you're committing a mortal sin. You don't inject any fear whatsoever. The best way is simply say, ooh, a real grown-up boy, a grown-up girl wouldn't do that. Namely, you try and train them out of it. A grown-up boy or grown-up girl won't do it. But don't think you'll succeed right away. You probably won't. But you shouldn't think, oh, my boy or my girl is on the way to be a pervert and anything like that. No. It's not abnormal. It's an accidental playing with themselves. The sexual organs are just like any other part of their body. So for the infantile masturbation, no fear, but rather you say a grown-up boy or grown-up girl would do it. Now in the second stage, if they masturbate from 6 to 10, then you should see your child psychiatrist or your pediatrician or ask your physician for a recommendation. Normally, children do not masturbate between 6 and 10 unless they have emotional problems. In one study, every child, practically speaking, that was masturbating between 6 and 10 came from a broken family or a family where there was great tension on the children. Normally, they don't masturbate then. From 11 up, that's when the so-called adult masturbation occurs. How frequent is this? Is the percentage of masturbation high? Yes, it is. How high? Hegemeyer says at the minimum, we must admit at the minimum that 9 out of every 10 boys have masturbated at least once in their lives. We must admit at the minimum that at least 5 out of every 10 girls have masturbated at least once in their lives. What does this mean? Does this mean that all of these acts of masturbation, namely fondling the sexual organ to get sexual pleasure, that all of these are mortal sins in God's sight? Not necessarily. That is the eye-opener. You're hearing something new that I'm telling you right now, in all likelihood. The action in itself is wrong. That's exactly what I'm saying. The action in itself is never justified to stimulate the sexual organs outside the time of the occasion of the marriage act between husband and wife, the general occasion. But remember that there are subjective factors that occur. It may happen that a child is caught off guard. It may happen that a habit has started accidentally, for the child knows it's wrong. It may happen that passion and feelings are so strong the child does not have the free will to stop them. And please understand that our free will is conditioned by our feelings and by habit. So for this reason, the child is responsible in God's sight to do what he or she can. This is an encouraging factor, which means that actually, in God's sight, many acts of masturbation, if the child doesn't want to give in them, suppose so often this happens before going to sleep, the boy or the girl is fighting it, or while taking a shower, but more often trying to go to sleep or waking up at nighttime. If it happens at times like that, if they did their best, all right, they did their best, they're not trying to give in to it, they didn't bring it on deliberately. Therefore, there can be an element of innocence. And it means that while in itself it would be wrong, it would not necessarily be a mortal sin in God's sight. They're making a distinction there. It can be innocent in God's sight, or at least, say, only a venial sin. What do you do? Tell them to be completely frank with their confessor if they confide in you. Masturbation never causes any physical damage to the body, or there's no permanent damage to the body, let's put it that way, even in the worst, the most spasmodic, obsessive masturbation. It is not good psychologically because it's the running away from reality. Nonetheless, physically, it does not cause damage to the body. And the child should not have any more false guilt on this than will be happening anyway. Which means you'll never tell your child, oh, you get big black marks under the eyes. Everybody will know you'll do it. You've disgraced us. You got pimples on your face. That's a horrible thing to say. So don't use any fear. Encourage the mercy of God. Encourage God, our loving Father. And this is the area where you should keep absolute confidence. This is something which should not be known to the rest of the family. If a child confides in you, treat that like a confessional secret. Urge trust in God's mercy, God's love, and then to talk about that with the confessor. So that's what I'd say there. Now, what should you do when the little boys play with their penis? As I say, if this is in that year from 5 or less, you simply say a grown-up boy won't do that. Other reasons might be their pants are too tight, their little panties, or if they're wearing jockey shorts, a jockey short might be too tight, too. Another reason, they've got a full bladder, and you say, they're just too lazy to go. So you say, Johnny, do you have to urinate? He'll say, yes. Then you say, well, go. But the same thing with little girls, you know, who are too lazy to go. You can tell that. A mother or father can tell that at once. Usually strangers don't get the signals, but a good parent does. So just tell them, you have to urinate, don't you? So, see, a lot of this may come from a reason like that. But the general approach, physical cleanliness and a normal approach in the organs with no idea of any paralyzing fear. Well, I do want to thank you for your tremendous attention. Thank you for the fine turnout this evening and the husbands that are here, I'll merely ask you that one favor. What I started with, I'll end with. Please quote me correctly, and just remember, in Evanston, there is not a bathtub big enough to hold everybody. But with that, I'll say good night, God bless you, and congratulations on your interest in each other, in Christian family life, and in your family. Please give all of us priests a prayer. We need it. We need your prayers. We promise you our own prayers that all of us together would go to God, and I'll see you someday on the other side of the bar. Not in Evanston, because Evanston is dry, as you know. I mean the heavenly bar. See you there. God love you. Good night. Thank you.